recess. And I would like to have both of you individuals introduce yourselves for the record. We also have Linda Sorensen and Dixie Wagner with us.
Into the mic. Good morning. I'm Dan Ruggieri, one of the partners at Employee Benefit Design.
And I'm Jamie Walkmeyer. I'm an account executive with Employee Benefit Design.
And it's that time of year, obviously, when we consider our insurance for the future and where we're at. And this is the chosen firm that the County Commission has picked to take us through the process. Okay. If you folks would like to lead off and tell us where we're at.
All right. First, before we get started talking too much about what's going into 2015, we just want to remind you of a couple of things from 2013 and 2014. So the first thing I have on the agenda there, we talk about the Cox renewal, was in 2013, you guys had a fantastic year. Your loss ratio was really low, and we had negotiated a program with Cox Health Plans that if you had a good year, you could get a return on premium. And so you did receive a check for $24,000 for favorable claims experience. So you guys are aware of that. That is something that happened earlier in 2014. This year, Cox is offering a 13% increase. And we'll get into that in a little bit more detail on why
offering. You make it sound like it's a good thing.
Well, 13% increase. Well, Brandon, when you hear, and we'll go into the details of what's happening with your plan year this year, them offering a 13%.
It's pretty good.
Actually is really good. Okay. Yes, quite honestly. So when we look at this 13%, we'll have you know that 10% of that is your premium renewal. The other 3% is comprised of Affordable Care Act fees and changes that had to be made to your plan design to be compliant. And the only change that had to be made to your plan design, it impacted the fees, the rates a little bit, is that, you know, you have a deductible, and then you have out-of-pocket maximum. Your out-of-pocket maximum going forward has to include all copays and prescription drug copays. So if you pay $25 to go to the doctor, or you pay $30 for a prescription drug, it has to go to your out-of-pocket maximum. So that is part of this premium increase. They factored in this richer benefit. So it is a slightly richer benefit than you have currently.
So let me ask you a question. So if during the year I go to the doctor five times and I pay that fee for visiting, that goes towards my...
Yes, it does.
Okay.
So it's one of those things when if you are an individual who meets your out-of-pocket maximum, you no longer have copays at that point either. You have met your out-of-pocket maximum and it's truly met for the year. So that is something that changed with healthcare reform. Carriers were given, it was supposed to happen in 2014, but if they were having difficulty applying the prescriptions to the out-of-pocket maximum, they had an additional year to get their systems in order. And so that's why you're going to see it in 2015 with Cox Health Plans. Okay. So that's the 13%. And where this is coming from is you guys have 110% loss ratio this year. Now, the loss ratio is where they look at how much was paid in premiums versus how much was paid out in claims. So you had 110%, 10% more than was taken in premium was paid out in claims. And in your...
And that does not include admin costs, reinsurance. That's just pure dollars.
Claims, yep. So if you look in your packet, it's about the fifth or sixth page back behind your renewal. I want to just show this to you so you guys can see it. On a chart, it looks like this. It says group experience summary, and at the top, it says, on the top of the page, it says current loss ratio 110%. You'll see prior loss ratio was 61%. And then what you'll see is it shows you month by month exactly how much was taken in premium and exactly how much was paid out in claims. For example, in the month of April, you'll see there were just in that one month alone, $216,000 was paid out in claims. And the page right behind that, the major driver in this was your high-dollar claimants. So if you go to the next page, this is called the shock claims. And because we are live right now, we're not going to discuss any of the specific cases or medical diagnoses that are on here. But what I can tell you is, you know, for example, member number 5, if you look on that list, is no longer active on the plan. But that was $516,000 in medical claims last year on one member alone. That's significantly impacted this year. Okay. In addition, what I want to point out is that when we sent this, because we're going to talk about the fact that we did go out to bid for your medical insurance. So we have marketed it and gone out to bid. As you know, you're required to bid your medical insurance at least every 3 years. At Employee Benefit Design, we do that for you every year. And we have gone out to bid, and we'll discuss what came back with that. But you will see, when we sent it out to bid, this $516,000 claim was only $283,000 at the time. And since then, more claims have come in to be paid on it. In addition, since this report was published, there's another member with $161,000 in claims.
And the diagnosis looks like it's going to be ongoing.
It is going to be ongoing. That one is a chronic hypertension, and it's $161,000, so it's, you know, it's high for a high blood pressure claimant, but that is one that will be an ongoing claim. It's not something, you know, there are times we can see claimants that come in, and it could be $161,000 for a motor vehicle accident. And then we know that that's going to resolve. There may be some physical therapy, but it's not going to be an ongoing large claimant. With some of these, we know that these are going to be ongoing large claimants, with the exception of member number 5 on there, who is no longer on the plan. Now, there may be some run-out claims, but this member's no longer on the plan. Okay. So we want to point those out, and then we'll go back to page number 1, where we talk about the other carriers. So we took this, like I said, out to bid. We took your claims data from the last several years.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, not at all.
Again, without any specifics, when we have individuals that have ongoing costs, such as we're seeing here, through claims, are there anything or any things that we can do additionally that we're not doing or offer that you can chat with us about later that might
Absolutely.
Help in those situations?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that we can do to assist with trying to change behaviors and impact those things so that some of those high-dollar claimants. But there are always going to be some high-dollar claimants that you can't necessarily impact. I mean, you know, a cancer case or something like that is going to be a high-dollar claimant that if we sat here and said we can get those down and we're not going to be able to change your cancer cases, if that makes any sense.
It does.
But there are things that we can impact.
Okay.
So what we did is we did like we do every year. We take all of your claims experience, your demographic, and your current rates. And we send it out to the marketplace to see what quotes we can get in from the other health insurance carriers. We look at whether or not self-funding would be a good option for you, because I know that is something we've discussed with the commission in the past with your good claims years. And when we haven't gone self-funded in the past, it's because we've warned there could be a year like this year that if you had been self-funded would have been catastrophic for you. But we did design your fully insured plan where you do get that refund of your premium if you have a good year. So I would like to point out that we went out to the market. United Healthcare was the only one who released a proposal, and they were 36.6% above current. So that's, Brandon, that's where I say, yes, Cox offered 13, because United was the only one who would quote, and that was 36. Cigna declined to quote. They said that it was just too high. There was no way they could compete. Aetna, which is also Coventry. So you guys previously were with Mercy, who was purchased by Coventry, who has now been purchased by Aetna. So that they declined to quote. Anthem declined to quote. And Health Solutions Group, which is a self-funded TPA, they declined to quote as well. So we have gone out to market, and really what we have from the market right now is Cox.
So if we were to circle back with the carriers we went to originally, which are all the carriers that do business in Missouri, we'd have another disclosure that we'd have to submit to them, and that's on that new high-dollar claimant.
That wasn't there before.
that
right,
wasn't there
the additional $161,000 claimant who was not there previously.
So there would be a good chance that United Healthcare, with this new disclosure, would increase their offer.
So in this packet, I showed you, there's a, on page 2 is the letter from Cox, page 3 is your same plan designs, and page 4, there are some options if you were looking to remain cost neutral. You know, we've got some examples there, how high you would have to raise the deductible in order to do that. So, you know, we're going to talk about some different options for you and what this means financially. But we wanted to show you different options from Cox that are not 13%. So by raising the deductible by $500 for each of your plans, that would get you at about an 8.8% on your core plan, which is the one that you are basing your premium contribution on.
Deductible is currently?
Currently on the core plan, it's $1,000.
So if you go to 1,500 is what you're saying?
If you go to 1,500, okay, it's an 8.8% increase. If you go to 2,000, it's a 5%. And then the next level from 2,000 would be 3,000, and that would result in a decrease in premiums. But, you know, we want to show you the different options that are out there and then have the discussion within for your employees and what that really would be and that impact to the county and to the employees and what kind of plan design you really want to consider. You'll notice, again, on that cover page I keep referring back to, but I did some math here, and, you know, currently the way that the county contributes is they contribute 100% of the employee-only premium on the base plan, which is $378. They contribute an additional $100 to anybody who's got dependent coverage. That's $478. That averages out to a monthly cost for the county of $99,330. That's on that cover sheet. So in 2015, if you decided, which the base plan is $427 for the single rate, so if the county continued to pay $427 plus an additional $100 for dependents, the cost, the monthly estimated cost is $110,845. So the increased cost to the county is about $10,500 a month if you kept the plan designs the same and kept the county's contribution strategy exactly as it is right now.
Talk to me about cost to dependents. Cost to employees for dependent coverage.
Right.
Going to see the same increase, or is it going to be a portion of the increase?
Well,
if you're covering spouse or children.
Family's going up $141.
Right. So the family coverage is going up. So, for example, if you look at employee spouse, it is going from 700.
Which page are you on?
So I'm on page 3. It's the easiest one. If you look at the similar plan design, so Brandon, if you look at this one, that's the same plan designs that you have currently. You will see the current rate for employee spouse is $776. That would be going up to $876. Okay? So if the county continued to pay the amount that they do right now, the $427 plus $100, and then the employee would pay the difference. So the employee spouse portion is going to go up about $50 for them. About $51.
You said the employee and spouse, or just the employee?
The employee and spouse. Because the employee only rate is going from 378 to 427.
Right.
So it's an increase of about $49.
So I'm sorry. I'm showing 776 to 876.
That's right. Yeah, it is.
So it's $100.
It's $100, but if you, as the county, pay that additional $49 that you're already paying, does that make sense? So you're paying more towards the coverage? Because, Brandon, what you guys do currently?
We pay $100 towards the...
You pay 370. So, like, employee spouse is 776 right now. you pay $378 plus $100.
Right.
Okay, so what I'm saying is on the $876, you'd pay $427 plus $100. If you do what you're doing now.
Currently, we're paying $378 for the employee, correct?
For the employee.
And we're paying $900 for the
plus an extra $100. So
we're
you're paying
$478
on all of the other three lines of coverage.
Okay.
Three categories of coverage.
How many of those additional $100 payments are we making?
You are currently making 105.
Okay. Sorry, Brandon.
No, you're fine.
That's an increase of numbers that we did have. Isn't it? Didn't we don't have quite a bit smaller number when we first initiated that? You know, I was thinking it was down in the 70s or 80s.
So you're saying we'd be doing 427
plus
100. Plus
100 if you kept it the same as you are right now. So that's what I'm seeing, that it's would be an increase, for example, in that category of about $51.
To the employee.
To the employee.
And
to
additional
cover
$50
employee
cost.
And spouse.
Is that
a
period per month?
Per month.
Per month.
So it, you know, that is a significant cost. I think when we've looked at this before, you guys choose as the county to contribute very, very generously to your employee-only coverage. We have very few employers who cover 100% of the employee-only coverage. That is a very generous contribution. In the majority of employers in Southwest Missouri, the average deductible is $1,500. So the county for your employees is very generous on both of those things. So when you look at the dependent coverage, quite possibly they could get less expensive spouse coverage, possibly through an individual plan or something else, but you're offering them an avenue to purchase coverage. You are offering them an extra $100 to help them out with the cost if they choose to purchase the plan through the county, but there are other options for them to purchase coverage elsewhere as well, especially with no longer having pre-existing condition exclusions and things like that. There are other ways for them to purchase coverage.
You think with what you're seeing out there that it's probable that the number of employees that we are supporting is going to go down that are choosing dependent coverage?
Well, it really depends, Ron, because quite honestly, we're seeing quite a few people, because of health care reform and the fact that they're going to have to pay a penalty on their taxes, they're starting to consider their employer's plans more so than maybe they were before because of that taxation. So we are seeing that. And on our end, though, we're trying to educate and tell them what the different options are for getting coverage. Because, you know, to Brandon's point, if you're paying $300 for your spouse, you may be able to go get, depending on your spouse's age and the kind of plan that they want, they may be able to go get coverage through an individual policy. So that's become part of our conversations and enrollment meetings, is educating the employees that their spouses do have other options other than just the county insurance for getting coverage.
Any employees that we currently have that are working 30 hours the first of the year, we have to provide full coverage for, even though they're not working the full 40 hours. Do I understand that right?
That is correct. With health care reform, and you guys are a group that's over 100 employees, so you're subject to pay or play in 2015. Pay or play states that you must offer coverage to any employees working an average of over 30 hours per week. So you look at that, you can average that over the course of a year, The one exception, just so you guys know, for 2015 is that you have to offer coverage to 70% of your employees. So I say that because if you had a class of employees that you did not want to offer coverage to because they were traditionally part-time, and if it was less than that 30%, you could still exclude them. No, you cannot. They have to be covered as a... That you're technically, what you're going to have now is you have two different definitions. You have full-time employee for all the rules and requirements and everything in your employee handbook, so your employment category of a full-time employee, and you have your benefit-eligible full-time employee, which is 30 hours. So you only have to offer them benefits, but you have to offer it equivocal to what you offer for your 40-hour. But as far as paid vacation, time off, any other benefits you offer to full-time employees under the employment handbook and policy, you don't have to offer to them.
But yes, those people that are working 30, well, you're receiving full benefits and not having to pay for any part of it. Mm-hmm. That's what where I was headed. That's what I understood.
That's why I asked the question.
Yes.
I know previously we have covered them.
We have some counties.
They were covered, offered insurance, they could be covered with the dedication 25%.
But not anymore.
We went through
we've
this
got some counties that are offering
policies.
We've got some counties that are only working 30-hour work weeks.
Right.
They're going to lower that to 28.
Yeah, we do have.
They're not going to offer any insurance.
Yeah, when I first walked in, Danny and I were talking about that. That's a big part of what I spend every day doing right now is the healthcare reform stuff and helping employers with designing these things. Like I was mentioning, you guys could say it has to be a class of employees for 2015. You could say we're going to continue to exclude part-time employees, even if you work over 30 hours, as long as it's not more than 30% of your population. Pay or play says that you must offer coverage for those working over 30 hours, on average over 30 hours, but you have to offer coverage to at least 70% of your employees for 2015. Now in 2016, you have to offer it to 95% of your employees, but that is one way for this year. Another way is, again, to monitor those hours and monitor it on a monthly basis to keep them below that 30 if they're not going to be someone you want to be benefit eligible. I mean, we've got employers that are keeping their employees to 27 hours and being very, very strict about it because they don't want to have to offer those benefits.
Another question. I've been to a couple of seminars when they said to
you. Rick, could we have you come join us so that those people that are listening could also hear? I could. Thank you. I'm sorry.
I've been to a couple of seminars where they have indicated it saved the employer a lot of money and was still very advantageous for the employees to raise the deductible, but the employer then would pay a portion of that deductible after that.
Mm-hmm.
Like ours is $1,000 deductible, right? If we went to the $1,500, it would save us quite a bit of money and offer to pay that $500 difference.
Yeah.
It can,
and we do that for a lot of our clients. That's called a health reimbursement arrangement or a deductible reimbursement. And what that does, what we have to evaluate before we do anything like that, Rick, we're going to be very careful to evaluate how many people you had meet your $1,000 deductible so that we know how much money you're going to be on the hook for. But you could do something such as a $3,000 deductible, which is the one on here that reduces your premium by 4.7%. And then the county self-funds the remaining $2,000, which means any claim that comes in, the employee has to file the claim with Cox. Once they meet their $1,000 deductible, then they'll begin, there will be a reimbursement of anything over that $1,000. And then the county will have to pay those claims as they come in. So it is an option. it can reduce your costs. We need to look at how many people are meeting your deductible. It does add a little bit of complexity, both for your employees to understand and for you to audit
and for them to also make a decision on it.
To make a decision, right, because
it has to be that way, I think.
Right, and I think when we look at counties and what we've talked about before with self-funding with you guys, a lot of times it seems counties really want to know, here is our budget. Here is what we're operating on. We know these are our costs. And we can bring you an HRA and we can say, here's your absolute worst case max liability. Here's what we think your expected will be. But that is going to be fluctuating. It's not going to be a set, we know on the nose, this is how much money you're going to spend. Because it's going to depend on your claims.
Also, there is a caveat in that if you change the underlying benefit, so when the underwriter underwrites a $3,000 deductible, we go back, we disclose to them that the true benefit is maybe still a $1,000 deductible, they're going to adjust those rates.
They will adjust the premiums. It is one of those things that you have to disclose to them.
Are you saying that they have you no matter what? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, I will tell you, right here at the bottom, Rick, on the bottom of this quote, actually from Cox, it says, the attached rates are subject to change if a plan is used in conjunction with a health reimbursement account. Because they do take that into consideration, because there are two factors. You have some people who meet their deductible because something happens. They have a major expense. For example, you have an MRI, you meet your deductible. There are some people, once they meet their deductible, they are no longer good healthcare consumers. They say, I've met my deductible. Now I'm going to go out and do this, and have that surgery I was putting off, because why not? So there's those factors that range in there. And so that's why when a carrier looks at a $3,000 deductible, if the underlying deductible is $1,000, they're going to say, hey, wait, employees are going to behave like it's $1,000, so we have to take that into consideration.
Right.
Yep. It's
a matter of educating employees.
It is.
How you do it.
Absolutely.
Is that a decision? Of course, it would have to be adjusted, I'm sure, from the provider's standpoint as well, that could be made mid-year.
So you
have to guesstimate how many people you think may use that deductible and not use that deductible.
You really have to estimate how many you're going to use it, because you can make changes to a plan mid-year, but when you make a plan change mid-year, you're changing your plan year. So if you decided, let's do this in July, you now have to go back to the carrier, get a July 1 renewal, get a July 1 plan design change, and you are no longer a January 1 group. Because you've made changes to your plan, it then changes your anniversary.
Which will change the rates.
Which would change the rates as well, because they would evaluate that at that point as to what your experience looks like.
But Rick, to kind of simplify the process, we have HRA administration companies that they get a feed from Cox Health Plans. We were the ones that originally set that up so that the employee doesn't necessarily have to go out and file a second claim with the HRA administration company. So we can't have them auto-adjudicate. The problem we run into, quite frankly, is if you're a business owner and you think your group is better than the average group, you can cash flow that in case you're not. Because at some participation percentage, you'd been better off just buying the lower premium. It's no different than if you have five kids and you're paying a $500 deductible on your car insurance, and you're guessing that, hey, I'm going to take the chance that maybe only one of my five kids has a wreck, and I'm going to take that $1,500 premium deductible, put that savings in my pocket, and only hope that I only have to go to my pocket where I save money on the premium and pay, an extra $1,000 deductible on my kids' automobile accident. But if you got three of them in one year that hit your deductible, you've now spent more than what you would have been spending just buying a $500 deductible. Mm-hmm. And that's something we can't, we can give you the probabilities, but we can't give it to you with any certainties. And there are some things I think
the county ought to do regarding health and wellness before you go into an HRA type participation. And we can discuss those later.
And what we wanted to do an initial discussion here to show you guys what the market says, what happened when we went out to bid, how everything looks, and get this initial discussion on the table. And then we can go back and we can bring you, here's your deductible report of 235 employees who have insurance plus all of the dependents. Here's how many people met that $1,000 deductible. Here's how many people met the $500 deductible. We can bring you costs for how much those HRAs cost, and we can model all of that for you at our next meeting. We just really wanted to start this initial conversation, say, where are we at? What are we looking at? What are you thinking as the county?
Jamie, can you explain on the self-funding you mentioned this year would have been catastrophic for us?
Yes.
Explain how that would have happened.
So when you, let's say at the end of 2013, where we got essentially that rate hold except for the healthcare reform fees from Cox because you had such a great year. If we had at that point said, let's go self-funded, you would have had stop loss. We would have probably set that at $75,000 for a group your size. We would have said your liability on each person, what the county will pay on each person is $75,000. Anything above that goes to reinsurance. We would have also had admin fees and an aggregate stop loss, those things that we would have set in place. Well, at the $75,000, you guys had at least three members that would have hit that. That means that you would have had $225,000 in claims above what you would have expected as normal claims, in addition to your admin fees, right, in addition to those premiums. And then the part that always catches people, so even if you have, even if you were at 110% on a self-funded, it's your renewal year that's going to hit hard. Because when we talk about that person that's $161,000 chronic hypertension, so you may have taken $75,000, but the other $86,000, my math, okay, it's Monday morning, forgive me, okay, that went to the reinsurance carrier. So when that reinsurance carrier issues your renewal, they're taking that into consideration. You could end up with things that are called lasers where they would say, we're not, this chronic hypertension person, you're now on the hook for $150,000 for this person next year because we took such a huge hit this year. You know, and so they can look at some of these diagnosis codes and say to you, because this person is such a high hit or we think that they're going to be next year, you get what's called a laser, which means the county has to pay more of the claims dollars associated with that individual person. So this year would have been a bad year because not only would you have been, instead of at 61% being able to kind of save up your first year, you would have been at a much higher loss ratio. But in addition, you would have hit specific stop loss on at least three people.
Up at the meeting we had last week with the other counties, this is a lower percentage increase than
many are facing.
Most are facing. Mm-hmm. They were in the 20s, 20, 27, 30.
Mm-hmm. With everything that we're seeing, quite honestly, Danny, this is a really good one. This one really surprised Dan and I, honestly, when it came in. And that's why Brandon, we said that they're offering because we knew what the claims were looking like. We had seen it through June when, you know, we sent it out to market. We knew. We've been talking with Linda and kind of giving you guys a heads up throughout the year that there were some things going on, and you guys knew that as the commissioners. So we were sitting there on pins and needles waiting for this renewal to come in, especially because we were getting the denials and then got the 36% from United before we even saw Cox's renewal. So for it to be at 13%, we were shocked, to say the least. It is a very favorable renewal given.
Well, and considering, you know, three, almost 4% built in for health care reform had nothing to do with your claims cost.
Right. And while I let that sink in, I'll just mention the other two things that are on this agenda. The life insurance, the short-term disability, and the long-term disability are all with Dearborn National and have been for 2 years. Dearborn National has come back and said that they will hold the rates and guarantee it for another 2 years on those benefits. And so I think that that would be a good idea to keep those so that the process of changing those insurances tends to be very difficult both for your payroll department, the HR department, and the employees. The rates are very competitive. No one was this competitive with Dearborn National when we looked at it previously. And for them to hold the rates for another 2 years is a very good benefit. On the dental plan, you'll remember last year we only had two viable options, one being MetLife and one being Assurant, and Assurant offered the rate cap. So they came back in this year to 7%, which was their rate cap. So that's your renewal that they're offering you and guaranteeing no more than 7% next year. A good portion of their increase has to do with health care reform because there are certain things that must be covered on the dental plan with health care reform as it relates to pediatric dental. Okay, and I put a little bit of a history on there for you guys because we have marketed for you and moved your dental. It moved to Assurant in 14. It was with Dearborn in 13. It was with Anthem in 12 and Delta Dental prior to that. So every year you guys have moved your dental, which isn't a big deal. It's not as big of a deal as if you were to move your medical. However, if we're to try to market that, the carriers are not going to be very competitive because they're going to say you're only getting a 7%. You've got a high loss ratio and you move every single year. So it makes it a little bit more difficult to try to get you guys other options on the dental plan. This dental with Assurant would be the same plan design that you have currently. And I did put a note on here. I think a lot of times the only complaint we really hear from your employees about dental has to do with the network. A lot of times your employees will ask, why aren't there carriers and providers in network? Why can't I find in-network providers? We have designed your plan so that you have the same benefits in-network and out-of-network. Same benefits because in the Branson-Taney County area, there are not a lot of dental providers who are willing to join a dental network. And it doesn't matter if it's Assurant, MetLife, Guardian, Principal, Lincoln, any of the carriers that are out there, the providers in this area don't tend to be part of a dental network. So we have designed it so that in or out of network, your employees get the same benefit. There may be some balance billing, depending on the charges from the dental provider, but that's going to be the same with any of the dental providers we would look at or choose for.
So regarding the two ancillary benefits that we're looking at, which contain more than two, but the Dearborn National mm-hmm. and Assurant certainly are your recommendation. Mm-hmm. Guys, do you want to address these and then go back to the medical plan? Because that's a no-brainer, at least as far as I'm concerned, that we should stay with Dearborn National and Assurant.
And you can see the very last page in your packet is the actual dental numbers. So even though it's 7%, which in your mind you say, 7%, but on dental because the premium is so much smaller, we're talking barely over $2 on the employee-only coverage is the increase. So it's a very minimal increase. The family coverage is only going up by $5. So the impact to your employees is only $3 per month because you pay the employee-only coverage. So it's a very minimal increase.
And actually, since they pre-tax it, it's even less than that.
As far as Dearborn goes, I can't say enough about how helpful they have been in several instances where they have gone over and above anything they needed to for our employees.
Well,
We've had some concerns with, there was a life insurance claim that we had some question on this year and some disability stuff, that they have just really stepped up and gone beyond what I would have expected them to do. We were very pleasantly surprised at how well they worked with the county. And so them giving the rate hold and how well they work with the county is okay.
Guys, do either of you have questions about the life insurance, short-term disability, long-term disability?
No. I don't.
Dental? I think we'd be in line to entertain a motion to remain with Dearborn National and Assurant for 2015. We also have the options then of moving forward into 2016 with both, right? Is that what I understood?
You have the option with 2016, Dearborn is holding those rates through 15 and 16. They have a two-year rate guarantee.
Assurant would have the same
7% Assurant has the 7% cap for 16. So we could market that one again for 16, which we would likely do, because at that point you've spent 2 years with Assurant. Looks a little bit better that you've spent a couple of years with a carrier, and see what we could get for you.
I'll make the motion that we stay with Assurant.
Dearborn National.
Dearborn National.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to remain with Dearborn National and Assurant for the 2015 calendar year discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed nay. Motion carries. Let's talk about the two offers that we've had. Obviously, the renewal with Cox and the other, which was 30.
United Healthcare at 36.6% increase.
36.6% increase over what we're currently paying, right?
Guys have any questions, that's fine. After I visited with the other counties, and then also I know that we have an excellent, I don't know of anybody else that pays $100 on the dependents, and also very few that pay the full amount on their employees.
Are you wanting to stay with that same strategy for 2015?
I'm willing to do so, although I do find myself in a position of thinking that some employees that don't have dependents are receiving extra $100 from the county.
They're not receiving.
That's what I mean.
Right, okay.
They're not receiving. But I wouldn't.
Well, and some of that may mean that they've also found cheaper insurance rather than with our group.
Right.
Some of them have.
Some have, but we still have a large group of dependents. And like I said, at one point, I think that was down. It was somewhat less. But I have no problem with the presentation that's been given to us and the percentages of that have been offered to stick with Cox.
All the other when do we have to decide as far as the deductible and those issues?
You know, what we would like to do
according to
with right, and that's the next part of the discussion that needs to happen is what do you want to do about deductibles or premiums? I think Don, for payroll, needs to have this done It needs to have open enrollment complete and all of the new payroll deductions to her before the second week of December.
I believe that's what she's thinking.
Yes. So we'd like to, prior to Thanksgiving, get open enrollment completed. So that's why I'm thinking in the next, like this last week of October, within the first 2 weeks of November, need to have a decision. So maybe the third week of November, we can do meetings, employees can get their enrollment forms in and get the payroll changes to Dawn before the 15th of December. So that's really what we're bringing. As far as Cox is concerned, it's not as critical of an issue. It's more getting everything done here with the county for payroll.
The increase of the deductible, you said, brings it down to about 8%, increase to 1,500 instead of 1,000.
Right. When we look at this sheet, so if you guys want to go back to this one that has several different options on it, okay? If you went to the, let's say, for example, the $1,500 deductible, which makes your increase only 8.8%, and then you would raise, you could raise the buy-up plan deductible as well if you wanted to, or you could keep that where it is at 500 and the employees just pay the additional cost. You know, that would reduce your cost. The $1,500 would reduce the premium cost to the county. But that wouldn't be one where you would want to do a deductible reimbursement. You know, at that point, it's just a $500. It's not that much.
Too much administrative.
Right. If you're wanting to do a deductible reimbursement, you would either go with option 3 or option 4 on this sheet. More than likely, option 4, because that gets you a decrease in the premium to assist with the cost to administer the HRA and the additional claims you will be paying out through the HRA.
HRA stands for?
The health reimbursement arrangement.
So that's what we, where we give the $100.
Oh, no, you're... That would be if you set the deductible at $3,000, and then you say, well, you're only responsible for $1,000. The county's going to pay up to $2,000 per person in exchange for that lower premium.
How many people did we have hit the deductible, do you know?
That's what we can get a deductible report from Cox and find out how many people you had.
And what's the maximum out of pocket?
The maximum out of pocket on this one would be $3,500. This different option.
Is that option 4?
Option 4.
Is that per person or family?
That's per person.
What is it for family?
Two times for family.
Mm-hmm. Brandon, the biggest driver of rates are going to be high-dollar claimants. And it doesn't matter if you're a county this size or manufacturing. Any type of business that is your size, a big portion of their premiums can be determined by their claims costs, their large claimants. So what we've spent a lot of our time doing is working with contribution strategies.
Now, they take off the top. Do they not use like a more of a median? They take get rid of the top one, get rid of the lower ones? Is there a formula or structure that does that or no?
Well, they do a rate blending from year to year, so you're going to get more credibility for the most recent 12 months, less for the prior 12 months, and they blend that. When you talk about large claimants, what you're looking at is you buy a certain amount of risk, and we don't know exactly what amount. Cox says, okay, we'll let the county have up to $150,000. We're going to take the amount over. I know what kind of spec the insurance company buys, but they'll apply a certain portion of that to a group dependent upon its size. So most of our clients, if they're going to pay 100% of the employee premium, they require that the employee at least do a health risk assessment. And at that point, once we aggregate the health risk assessment, then we can look at and come back to the county and say, okay, we have a high number of diabetes claims. We need to structure some program education around diabetes, so that we can help control costs going into the future. And I think that's the first step. Because if we don't have a good handle on the claims cost, it's difficult to talk to you about self-funding, It's difficult about talking about HRAs if we don't know what the risk is. And right now, I think he had 34 people come to the health risk assessment. That's such a small percentage that I would gather to say, because you're no different than any other group, those folks probably already knew that they were doing fine and just wanted validation. And that's just the psychology of it. So our recommendation would be make a contribution difference for those that want to participate and those that don't want to.
Given it's
you're responsible with handling a high ticket item on your budget. But frankly, there's no risk management being done, because if you don't know what risks are out there. So for example, someone, this hypertension case, maybe this thing could have been handled a little bit differently, and maybe they're on the path of needing high medical treatment costs right now. If it could have been diagnosed early, which through any type of health screening process, it might not have turned into a large claim.
Could be me, because the cost of insurance going up, so it's a vicious cycle.
I understand that, because we just got our
next one, yeah.
And ours was 32%.
So, and also, if I'm not mistaken, and this might have been talked about, and I'm sorry I missed that Southwest Commissioners meeting, but a number of counties are also, I don't know what you would call it, blending the plan. They're offering, and that's where you were headed, they're offering to pay 100% or 90% or 80% of the cost of medical coverage, or an additional 5% if, in fact, you do the health screenings.
That's right.
They become mandatory, or if you're a non-smoker, it's another 5%. Mm-hmm. So they don't pay the full, most of them don't pay the full premium anyway.
Right.
But they pay more for those who comply with what has been set forth by the commission that's offering it.
Yeah. And that is something that we mandatory see. We have several clients that do that, that they have a different structure, so they could have, here's your rate. If you will do the health risk assessment, here's your premium. If you will do the health risk assessment and you're non-tobacco user, here's your premium. And so they have different tiers of that. We would recommend at least for the health risk assessment. You know, it may not be something you guys want to go from being 100% to now you're going to have this tobacco surcharge and everything else all in the same year.
Right.
But when you have Cox Health Plans provides and pays for your health risk assessment, so your employees can come and get that on-site biometric screening and blood draw done at no charge. And of 235 employees, only 34 took advantage. And, you know, that's not a good result. It's not a very good result at all. And if we could get more of them there, they get that result. And then they also get the outreach from people who know, okay, you're diabetic, we need to get you engaged, and we need to figure out what's going on. We need to do some wellness seminars. We need to do some other things to try to improve it. And I often use myself as an example. You guys know I take very good care of myself. I eat healthy, I work out, I take good care of myself. My employer requires that I do my biometric screening every year. I found out I have high blood pressure and high cholesterol. I would never, now high blood pressure I get because I have a son. And you know, that's just kind of a stressful job and an 8-year-old. So I get that. But the high cholesterol I would have never guessed because of how healthy I am. But it's genetic. Everybody knows that that can be one of the types. And now I'm aware of it, and I can watch it from year to year, and I can make smart decisions. If I didn't get my biometric screening, I wouldn't have that knowledge to make those choices. And I think sometimes people don't have that knowledge. And so Cox is willing to pay for that for your employees. So we want to take advantage of it. That also avoids the $300 or $400 claim when they go to their doctor's office to get that same exact blood work done instead of it hitting your medical plan. They've already gotten that blood work done, gotten those results by doing it for free on site. So it's a lot of benefits to it. And when we look at your increase this year, going from 378 to 427 on the single rate, that is something that's about $50 a month, right? We can estimate that as about $50 a month and say, if you do not participate, or you indicate to us you're not going to do it, then your premium will be $50 per month for health insurance.
That's something obviously we need to give some thought to, and we need to sit, we need to discuss that and look at what the different options are. Yeah. And I already have some thoughts on what some of the different counties are doing, but maybe we could take a look at the big decision for us, and we could make this decision today if we choose to do so, is to stay with Cox for 2015, and then build what we're going to build and do it in a timely fashion so that we meet all the time requirements that need to be met for Don and the others. But I think that we could take the first step of approving a motion to continue with Cox for 2015, but we need to make some hurried decisions about whether or not we pay part of the deductible, whether or not we have a higher deductible and pay that, whether or not we continue or are going to impose fees, if you will, if you're not compliant with this or that. Do you all have any objection to moving forward with renewing Cox for 2015?
I don't. I'll make that motion. We can have a discussion after that, but I'll make the motion that we stick with Cox for 2015.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to continue with Cox for 2015 as presented. There are certain, this is not part of the motion, but just a comment, certain criteria that we're going to have to solve or complete or make determinations on ASAP. Motion's made and seconded. Discussion. All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed nay. Motion carries. What I'd like to do are two things. Have you work with Linda and Dixie, and let's set up a time where we can sit and chat about the directions we want to head, and you can more fully inform us of some of the things that you know about out there that other counties have done, and or cities, et cetera. And number two, I would like to go into executive discussion to talk with you about some of the issues that we're currently facing as a health provider that we have to talk about in executive session. Is that all right with you, gentlemen?
I'm fine with it, but do we have it on our agenda?
Yeah, we're scheduled for that.
Do you need a motion now, or is that what you want to do?
Yes.
I'll make a motion.
Well, let me ask first. Do you two have anything else to add?
No.
Or do you in open session that we need to discuss?
No.
Brandon or Dan?
We might take a recess before we do it.
Well, let's go into executive, and we'll take a recess if that's all right.
You?
Yeah.
Motion to go into executive session 610.021, subsections 3 and 12.
Second.
Motion is made to go into executive session pursuant to 610.021, subsections 3 and 12. Discussion. All in favor say aye. Scott, if you hold on.
Danny and I.
Brandon and I.
And Ron, I. All opposed nay. Motion carries. We'll stand in recess for just a few minutes, and then we'll begin exec session.